Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. I'm Thomas, and I'm your host. Thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Now, the way this podcast works is really simple. You just pick an episode, press play, and get comfortable in bed. We'll take a moment to relax, and then I or one of my friends will read you a bedtime story that's designed to gently grasp your attention and guide you to sleep. The more you tune in, the more effective the podcast will be at putting you to sleep. So be sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. And that way, you'll never miss a good night's rest. You can help spread the word about Get Sleepy and encourage new listeners to find us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. And as always, I'd encourage you to give us feedback or share any ideas you have at our website, getsleepy.com. And speaking of which, tonight's big thank yous go out to Kathleen, Lorraine, Lauren, Tanya Lee, Pernil, and Finn. It's really special to hear from all of you, and I appreciate you taking the time and the effort to message me and the team directly. Now, tonight's story, narrated by Suzanne, is a classic fable about the Greek god Jupiter, or Zeus as he is otherwise known. Greek mythology is so fascinating, I think, and the influence it's had on civilization through the ages is pretty incredible. Whether or not you're into astrology and the zodiac, these ancient tales, such as the one you're going to hear tonight, make for a great read or listen, as is tonight's case. And I actually visited an archaeological site last summer on my holidays. It was a really small island called Delos. And in mythology, it's said to be the birthplace of Apollo and Artemis. And evidence of the first habitation on the island dates all the way back to the 3rd millennium BC. The Greeks have managed to preserve an impressive number of sculptures and buildings and temples that are on the island. And I'm always so amazed that these ancient civilizations were such capable architects, even all those thousands of years ago, and to be able to build these sometimes huge and breathtaking feats of architecture that had the durability to survive for so long. It's just incredible, really, when you think about it. So as we prepare to listen to tonight's story, let's tune in to the relaxation of bedtime. I believe there's a real feeling of safety and comfort about getting into bed. It's a time where we can properly let go of our worries and our responsibilities that everyday life tends to bring to all of us. And in your bed, you can get cozy and just enjoy this time to rest and let go. So as you take a few deep, slow breaths in and out, be thankful for the comfort of your bed, the softness of the pillow supporting your head and neck, and the peace you feel as you lay still and listen to my voice. Hearing a soothing, sleepy bedtime story might be something that draws out nostalgia from when you were young. And if so, you can even take your mind back there, to that feeling of safety and contentment. So now, as you return to your normal breathing pattern, and you just feel your body sinking into the bed. You're beginning the path towards sleep. Let your mind drift to a towering mountaintop, a place fit for the gods, where the power is so strong that mighty storms build. This is the home of the Greek god Jupiter, and it's where our story begins.
A long time ago, when the world was much younger than it is now, people told and believed a great many wonderful stories about wonderful things which neither you nor I have ever seen. They often talk about a certain mighty being called Jupiter or Zeus, who was king of the sky and the earth. And they said that he spent most of his time amid the clouds on the top of a very high mountain, where he could look down and see everything that was going on the earth below. He liked to ride on the storm clouds and hurl burning thunderbolts right and left among the trees and rocks. And he was so mighty that when he nodded, the earth quaked. The mountains trembled and smoked. The sky grew black, and the sun hid his face. Jupiter had two brothers, both of them terrible fellows, but not nearly so great as himself. The name of one of them was Neptune, or Poseidon, and he was the king of the sea. He had a glittering golden palace far down in the deep sea caves where the fishes lived and the red coral grows. And whenever he was angry, the waves would rise as high as mountains and the storm winds would howl fearfully. And the sea would try to break over the land. Men called him the Shaker of the Earth. The other brother of Jupiter was a sad, pale-faced being whose kingdom was underneath the earth, where the sun never shone, and where there was darkness and weeping and sorrow all the time. His name was Pluto, or Adonis, and his country was called the Lower World, or the Land of Shadows, or Hades. Men said that whenever anyone died, Pluto would send his messenger, or shadow leader, to carry that one down into his cheerless kingdom. And for that reason, they never spoke well of him, but thought of him only as the enemy of life. A great number of other mighty beings lived with Jupiter among the clouds on the mountaintop. So many that I can name a very few only. There was Venus, the queen of love and beauty, who was fairer by far than any woman that you or I have ever seen. There was Athena, or Minerva, the queen of the air, who gave people wisdom and taught them how to do very many useful things. There was Juno, the queen of earth and sky, who sat at the right hand of Jupiter and gave him all kinds of advice. There was Mars, the great warrior, whose delight was in the din of battle. There was Mercury, the swift messenger, who had wings on his cap and shoes, and who flew from place to place like the summer clouds when they are driven before the wind. There was Vulcan, a skillful blacksmith who had his forge in a burning mountain and wrought many wonderful things of iron and copper and gold. And besides these, there were many others about whom you will learn by and by, and about whom men told strange and beautiful stories. They lived in glittering golden mansions, high up among the clouds, so high indeed that the eyes of men could never see them. But they could look down and see what men were doing, and oftentimes they were said to leave their lofty homes and wander unknown across the land or over the sea. And of all these mighty folk, Jupiter was by far the mightiest. Jupiter and his mighty folk had not always dwelt amid the clouds on the mountaintop. In times long past, a wonderful family called Titans had lived there and had ruled over all the world. There were 12 of them, 6 brothers and 6 sisters, and they said that their father was the sky and their mother was the earth. They had the form and looks of men and women, but they were much larger and far more beautiful. The name of the youngest of these Titans was Saturn, and yet he was so very old that men often called him Father Time. He was the king of the Titans, and so, of course, was the king of all the earth besides. Men were never so happy as they were during Saturn's reign. It was the true golden age then. The springtime lasted all the year. The woods and meadows were always full of blossoms, and the music of singing birds was heard every day and every hour. It was summer and autumn too at the same time. Apples and figs and oranges always hung ripe from the trees, and there were purple grapes on the vines, and melons and berries of every kind, which the people would happily pick and eat. Of course, nobody had to do any kind of work in that happy time. There was no such thing as sickness or sorrow or old age. Men and women lived for hundreds and hundreds of years and never became gray or wrinkled, but were always handsome and young. They had no need of houses, for there were no cold days, nor storms, nor anything to make them afraid. Nobody was poor, for everybody had the same precious things: the sunlight, the pure air, the wholesome water of the springs, the grass for a carpet, the blue sky for a roof, the fruits and flowers of the woods and meadows. So, of course, no one was richer than another, and there was no money, nor any locks or bolts, for everybody was everybody's friend, and no man wanted to get more of anything than his neighbors had. When these happy people had lived long enough, they fell asleep, and their bodies were seen no more. They flitted away through the air, and over the mountains, and across the sea, to a flowery land in the distant west. And some men say that even to this day, they are wandering happily hither and thither about the earth, causing babies to smile in their cradles, easing the burden of the toil-worn and sick, and blessing mankind everywhere. What a pity it is that this golden age should have come to an end. But it was Jupiter and his brothers who brought about the sad change. It is hard to believe, but men say that Jupiter was the son of the old Titan king Saturn, and that he was hardly a year old when he began to plot how he might wage war against his father. As soon as he was grown up, he persuaded his brothers, Neptune and Pluto, and his sisters, Juno, Ceres, and Vesta, to join him, and they vowed that they would drive the Titans from the earth. Then followed a long and terrible war. But Jupiter had many mighty helpers, a company of one-eyed monsters called Cyclops were kept busy all the time, forging thunderbolts in the fire of burning mountains. Three other monsters, each with 100 hands, were called in to throw rocks and trees against the stronghold of the Titans, and Jupiter himself hurled his sharp lightning darts so thick and fast that the woods were set on fire and the water in the rivers boiled with the heat. Of course, good, quiet old Saturn and his brothers and sisters could not hold out always against such foes as these. At the end of 10 years, they had to give up and beg for peace. They were bound in chains of the hardest rock and thrown into a prison in the lower worlds, and the Cyclops and the 100-handed monsters were sent there to be their jailers and to keep guard over them forever. Then men began to grow dissatisfied with their lot. Some wanted to be rich and own all the good things in the world. Some wanted to be kings and rule over the others. Some, who were strong, wanted to make slaves of those who were weak. Some broke down the fruit trees in the woods, lest others should eat of the fruit. Some, for mere sport, hunted the timid animals which had always been their friends. At last, instead of everybody being everybody's friend, everybody was everybody's foe. So, in all the world, instead of peace, there was war. Instead of plenty, there was starvation. Instead of innocence, there was crime. And instead of happiness, there was misery. And that was the way in which Jupiter made himself so mighty. And that was the way in which the golden age came to an end. In those old, old times, there lived two brothers who were not like other men, nor yet like those mighty ones who lived upon the mountaintop. They were the sons of the one of those Titans who had fought against Jupiter and been sent in chains to the strong prison house of the lower world. The name of the elder of these brothers was Prometheus, or Forethought, for he was always thinking of the future and making things ready for what might happen tomorrow, or next week, or next year, or it may be in 100 years to come. The younger was called Epimetheus, or Afterthought, for he was always so busy thinking of yesterday, or last year, or 100 years ago, that he had no care at all for what might come to pass after a while. For some cause, Jupiter had not sent these brothers to prison with the rest of the Titans. Prometheus did not care to live amid the clouds on the mountaintop. He was too busy for that, while the mighty folk were spending their time in idleness, drinking nectar, and eating ambrosia. He was intent upon plans for making the world wiser and better than it had ever been before. He went out amongst men to live with them and help them, for his heart was filled with sadness when he found that they were no longer happy as they had been during the golden days when Saturn was king. Ah, how very poor and wretched they were. He found them living in caves and in holes of the earth, shivering with the cold because there was no fire, dying of starvation, hunted by wild beasts and by one another, the most miserable of all living creatures. If only they had fire, said Prometheus to himself, they could at least warm themselves and cook their food. And after a while, they could learn to make tools and build themselves houses. Without fire, they are worse off than the beasts. Then he went boldly to Jupiter and begged him to give fire to men, so that they might have a little comfort through the long, dreary months of winter. Not a spark will I give, said Jupiter. No, indeed. Why, if men had fire, they might become strong and wise like ourselves, and after a while, they would drive us out of our kingdom. Let them shiver with cold, and let them live like the beasts. It is best for them to be poor and ignorant, so that we mighty ones may thrive and be happy. Prometheus made no answer, but he had set his heart on helping mankind, and he did not give up. He turned away and left Jupiter and his mighty company forever. As he was walking by the shore of the sea, he found a reed, or as some say, a tall stalk of fennel, growing, and when he had broken it off, he saw that its hollow center was filled with a dry, soft pith, which would burn slowly and keep on fire a long time. He took the long stalk in his hands and started with it towards the dwelling of the sun in the far east. Mankind shall have fire in spite of the tyrant who sits on the mountaintop, he said. He reached the place of the sun in the early morning, just as the glowing golden orb was rising from the earth and beginning his daily journey through the sky. He touched the end of the long reed to the flames, and the dry pith caught on fire and burned slowly. Then he turned and hastened back to his own land, carrying with him the precious spark hidden in the hollow center of the plant. He called some of the shivering men from their caves and built a fire for them and showed them how to warm themselves by it and how to build other fires from the coals. Soon, There was a cheerful blaze in every rude home in the land, and men and women gathered around it and were warm and happy and thankful to Prometheus for the wonderful gift which he had brought to them from the sun. It was not long until they learned to cook their food and so to eat like men instead of like beasts. They began at once to leave off their wild and savage habits, and instead of lurking in the dark places of the world, they came out into the open air and the bright sunlight and were glad because life had been given to them. After that, Prometheus taught them, little by little, a thousand things. He showed them how to build houses of wood and stone, and how to tame sheep and cattle and make them useful, and how to plow and sow and reap, and how to protect themselves from the storms of winter and the beasts of the woods. Then he showed them how to dig in the earth for copper and iron, and how to melt the ore, and how to hammer it into shape and fashion it from the tools and weapons which they needed in peace and war. And when he saw how happy the world was becoming, he said, "A new golden age shall come, brighter and better by far than the old." Things might have gone on very happily indeed, and the golden age might really have come again, had it not been for Jupiter. But one day, when he chanced to look down upon the earth, he saw the fires burning, and the people living in houses, and the flocks feeding on the hills, and the grain ripening in the fields, and this made him very angry. "Who has done all this?" he asked. And someone answered, "Prometheus." Of course, it would be easy enough to deal with Prometheus at any time, and so Jupiter was in no great haste about it. He made up his mind to distress mankind first, and he thought of a plan for doing it in a very strange roundabout way. In the first place, he ordered his blacksmith, Vulcan, whose forge was in the crater of a burning mountain, to take a lump of clay, which he gave him, and mold it into the form of a woman. Vulcan did as he was bidden, and when he had finished the image, he carried it up to Jupiter, who was sitting among the clouds with all the mighty folk around him. It was nothing but a mere lifeless body, but the great blacksmith had given it a form more perfect than that of any statue that has ever been made. "Come now," said Jupiter, "let us all give some goodly gift to this woman." And he began by giving her life. Then the others came in their turn, each with a gift for the marvelous creature. One gave her beauty, and another a pleasant voice, and another good manners, and another a kind heart, and another skill in many arts. And lastly, someone gave her curiosity. Then they called her Pandora, which means the all-gifted, because she had received gifts from them all. Pandora was so beautiful and so wondrously gifted that no one could help loving her. When the mighty folk had admired her for a time, they gave her to Mercury, the light-footed, and he led her down the mountainside to the place where Prometheus and his brother were living and toiling for the good of mankind. He met Epimetheus first and said to him, "Epimetheus, here is a beautiful woman whom Jupiter has sent you to be your wife." Prometheus had often warned his brother to be aware of any gift that Jupiter might send, for he knew that the mighty tyrant could not be trusted. But when Epimetheus saw Pandora, how lovely and wise she was, he forgot all warnings and took her home to live with him and be his wife. Pandora was very happy in her new home, and even Prometheus, when he saw her, was pleased with her loveliness. She had brought with her a golden casket, which Jupiter had given her at parting, and which he had told her held many precious things. But wise Athena, the queen of the air, had warned her never, never to open it, nor look at the things inside. "They must be jewels," she said to herself, and then she thought of how they would add to her beauty if only she could wear them. "Why did Jupiter give them to me if I should never use them, nor so much as look at them?" she asked. The more she thought about the golden casket, the more curious she was to see what was in it. And every day she took it down from its shelf and felt of the lid and tried to peer inside of it without opening it. "Why should I care for what Athena told me?" she said at last. "She is not beautiful, and jewels would be of no use to her. I think that I will look at them, at any rate. Athena will never know. Nobody else will ever know." She opened the lid very little, just to peep inside. All at once, there was a whirring, rustling sound, and before she could shut it down again, out flew 10,000 strange creatures with death-like faces and gaunt and dreadful forms, such as nobody in all the world had ever seen. They fluttered for a little while about the room and then flew away to find dwelling places wherever there were homes of men. They were diseases and cares, for up to that time, mankind had not had any kind of sickness, nor felt any troubles of mind, nor worried about what the morrow might bring forth. These creatures flew into every house, and without anyone seeing them, nestled down in the bosoms of men and women and children, and put an end to all their joy. And ever since that day, they have been flitting and creeping, unseen and unheard, over all the land, bringing pain and sorrow and death into every household. If Pandora had not shut down the lid so quickly, things would have gone much worse. But she closed it just in time to keep the last of the evil creatures from getting out. The name of this creature was Foreboding. And although he was almost half out of the casket, Pandora pushed him back and shut the lid so tight that he could never escape.